And now it's time for the Northern Storyteller. Hello, I'm Mike Herman. Today I'll be reading from the book Tanina Tales from Alaska by Bill Vodrin. This story is entitled The Seagull Story. A long time ago, a young Indian was snaring seagulls in a large river in the fall time. As the salmon spawned and died and their bodies washed up on the riverbank, gulls and crows would hang around to eat them, especially around the mouths of the rivers where the fish were thickest. This young trapper had been having bad luck all fall. No matter how hard he tried, he just couldn't seem to hold the gull. They kept making off with his snares and ruining his best set. So he started tying down the snares to heavier brushes and deadfalls. That'll fix them, he thought. Just let them try to fly away with those things hanging around their necks. But he still kept losing snares, so he was forced to check his sets more often. Early one cold and foggy morning, while he was going over his line, he caught a freshly snared seagull trying to fly away with one of his sets. Since it was attached to a heavy stick, however, the gull couldn't carry it up into the air. By beating his wings as fast as he could, he was just able to drag it flopping along behind him on the ground. "Hey, you! Stop!" cried the boy. "Come back here with my snare!" But his yelling just scared the gull, and it tried all the harder to escape. The bird flew along just above the ground, with the heavy length of wood dangling along behind. It was having a hard time, but going pretty fast. The young Indian ran after it, yelling and trying to grab hold of the snare or the deadfall, but he couldn't quite catch up. The gull kept just ahead of him, flying for all it was worth. The chase went on and on. The fog was so thick that several times the boy almost lost sight of the tricky gull. But then sometimes it looked like he would catch it, he came so close. But he never got quite close enough. All through the day the chase went on, and the fog never lifted once. Pretty soon, the boy realized that he was completely lost. He had no idea where he was. If he could come this far, he made up his mind to catch that gull. And the bird seemed to be weakening. He was sure it couldn't hold out much longer. But he could see, even through the fog, that night was coming on. And if he didn't catch it soon, it would be so dark he'd have to give up. Just then, the boy spotted lights up ahead. The bird seemed to be heading for them. As he got closer, he could see that the lights were coming from the windows of a huge house, and the gull had disappeared. Figuring that the bird had gone inside, the young Indian pounded on the door with his fist. The door opened, and he rushed inside. The boy looked around and almost fainted from what he saw. He had run into a huge room, like his village meeting hall, and people like himself were lying all around on skins and blankets, in pretty tough shape. Some had lost an arm or a leg. Others had scars and bruises or strange-looking bindings fastened around their necks and waist. One man had passed out on the floor just inside the door. There was a long snare around his neck fastened to a large deadfall that lay beside him. Then the young Indian realized that he had stumbled right into the home of the seagull people. He'd often heard the old-timers in his village say that birds and smaller animals were people just like themselves, and lived in their own homes and had their own families, but he'd never believed it. He'd even been bawled out by the old people for snaring gulls, but he just thought they were superstitious. Now he realized the awful things he'd done, and he was really ashamed of himself. But he knew that crying about it wouldn't help any, so he set right to work to fix up the damage he'd done. First, he took off all the snares from those who still wore them. Then he fixed up medicines from roots and plants to cleanse and heal those who were hurt. The young Indian worked right on through the night. Those of the seagull people who were well enough helped him. Finally, along toward morning, when he'd done all that was possible for the time being, he collapsed and they carried him to bed. He slept long and hard, but when he woke up, he went right back to work. Several days passed, and he never once left the house, to push himself hour after hour, doing all he could to help out. Because of his hard work and dedication, he earned the respect of all the Seagull people. They not only forgave him for what he'd done, but they liked him so well, they invited him to stay there and live with them. The young Indian said he would do that, since he liked all the people so well, and they lived in such a beautiful country. But the Seagull people warned him about a small house down in the woods, just below their own. "If you stay here," they said, "whatever you do, don't go near that house." When he asked them why, they said they couldn't tell him, but whatever happened, he could never go near that house. So he promised them he wouldn't. All went well at the big house for some time. More and more of the injured gull people were up and around by the hour. They recovered quickly under the young Indian's care, and they liked him better than ever. Then, one day, as he was walking around the edge of the woods in search of roots and plants to make medicine, he stumbled into a little house, the little house about which the gull people had warned him. Remembering what they'd said and his promise, he was about to pass on by when he heard someone whisper. It was a woman's voice, but couldn't see where it was coming from. Then he spotted her, over by the little house door. She was young and pretty, and seemed to be calling him over to the house. At first, he thought he'd better not go, but then he got to wondering why everyone was afraid of such a pretty young girl. He figured he could take care of himself, and was curious, so he started walking over to her. When he got right up close, she surprised him by grabbing him and yanking him right in through the door. She did it so fast she almost knocked him down, but she didn't seem anxious to hurt him, so he didn't try to resist. Inside, the place was bigger than it looked, and there was one strange feature about the room. Right in the middle of the dirt floor was a deep hole. The girl dragged the young man over beside it, and when he looked down in, he saw a gigantic, horrible-looking fat woman. She had skins and blankets and some other things right down in there with her. He figured she must have weighed about 600 pounds. "Mother," the girl said, "I brought a man." The fat, ugly woman said nice things to the young Indian then, but it still didn't make him trust her. The girl invited him to sit down and have something to eat, so he did. His walk through the woods had made him hungry. He went to the other end of the room and brought back a covered dish, which she offered him. He took off the cover and started to reach into the dish, but when he saw that it was filled with human fingers, he changed his mind. Now he realized that they were cannibals, and he thought he'd better play along carefully. "No thanks," he said. "I couldn't eat that stuff." She shrugged and returned the dish. When she came back, she told him that she wanted to marry him. He thought he'd better not argue with her, so he went along with her ideas. They sat and talked for a long time, and soon it was bedtime. As they turned in, the young Indian noticed that it was really dark in the little house. After a while, he could tell by the girl's snoring that she was asleep. He breathed heavily and pretended that he was sleeping himself. Then he heard the fat old woman crawling up out of her hole and sneaking across the floor. When she got up next to the bed, he could feel the heat of her breath on his cheek. He started feeling around to see which side of the bed he was sleeping on. He was soon satisfied and crawled back to her den. The young Indian was really breathing heavily now, and he was cold with sweat. He knew that the old lady was up to no good. As soon as she was back down in her hole, he switched places with the girl without waking her up. It wasn't long before he heard the sound of the old woman coming up out of her pit again and crawling across the dirt floor toward the bed. In her hand was a huge butcher knife. The young Indian made his voice sound like the girl's and whispered, "She's sound asleep now." "Okay," said the woman, "where's his neck?" He took her huge hand with his own and placed it on her daughter's neck. "Right there," he whispered. At that, she raised the knife high above her head and plunged it into her daughter's neck, completely severing the head from the body. The fat old woman then licked off the knife, but as she did, she became angry and cried, How come this tastes so much like my daughter's blood? The young Indian thought fast. Our blood tastes alike, he said, still imitating the girl's voice, because we're married. The ugly old woman seemed satisfied with this and crawled back to her hole, looking forward to a feast in the morning. Not until he heard her snoring heavily did the young man move. Then he quietly sneaked out the door and ran as fast as he could up to the seagull people's house. They had been worried about him, for they had guessed what had happened. After he told them what he had done, they were really afraid, for they knew that as soon as the 600-pound woman found out about what had happened, she would come after all of them. But the young Indian had a plan. He told the people to gather up 2 sacks full of rocks and help him set them up over the top of the door on the inside. They went right to work, and soon the job was done. Then they waited. In the morning, they heard a shriek. The woman had discovered her daughter's headless body. Then they heard her coming. She was crying, screaming, and singing all at the same time, telling how she had killed her daughter by mistake instead of the young man. She was crawling on her hands and knees and belly, since she was so fat she couldn't walk, and she was carrying the monstrous butcher knife in her hand. With it, she was cutting down everything in her path. The old woman had long arms and was hacking out a wide trail, not just grass, but brush and trees and anything else that got in her way. Then she was in the doorway screaming, "Where is he?" And the seagull people yelled, "He's right above you." She twisted her head around to look up just as the young Indian cut the rope holding 1 sack of rocks, and 500 or 600 pounds of them crashed down on her head. This stunned her for a minute, and the young man jumped down from his perch above the door. With 1 swing of an axe, he lopped off her head. But the old woman wouldn't die. She fought blindly, wildly on, lashing out with her huge knife. Luckily, the young Indian had heard enough of the old village legends so that he knew what to do. He spit on the open wound, and she died immediately. It took several days for things to return to normal for the seagull people, and by that time, their Indian friend had decided to return to his own village. He told them that he liked staying there, but that he was homesick for his own people. They understood, although they were sorry to see him go, and gave him instructions how to find his way home. Pointing back the direction from which he had come, they said, "You must cross 3 mountain ranges, then you'll see a house. There you'll find a woman who will show you the way home." Though it had taken him only 1 day to make the trip when he had been running after the snared gull, it took him 3 to find his way back. Finally, he spotted the house he was looking for. He walked right in and found an old woman sitting in a small chair. He asked her what direction he would have to go to find his way home. "Do you know where you are?" she asked. "No," he said, "I don't." The woman reached down and pulled open a small trapdoor beside her chair and told him to look through it. When he did, he couldn't believe what he saw. He was way up in space. Far below, he could see his family's fish village. He could even recognize his brothers and sisters, but he was clear up in the clouds. Somehow, when he'd been chasing the seagull that foggy morning, the bird had led him through a secret passage from the earth below to its home in the sky. The young Indian was really afraid. How would he ever get home? The kind old woman, however, told him not to be afraid. She would get him down there, but he would have to help. At her direction, the boy spent 3 days pulling up vines called Indian ropes in the woods. When she felt that they had enough, she tied them all together into 1 long rope. She made 1 end fast around his waist and said to him, "Now I'll lower you down. You'll hit something, but don't open your eyes until you can reach out and feel grass on the ground." So he slipped down through the hole, and she began letting out the rope. He dropped lower and lower as she paid it out. Then he felt his body bump against something and thought, "This must be the ground." So he opened his eyes. The woman yanked him clear back up through the hole. "I told you that you would hit something," she said, "but it's not the ground. Don't open your eyes until you can feel grass." So she let him down again and began paying out the rope. He felt his body hit something, but he kept his eyes closed. Then he bumped into something else. This time, it was really solid. He thought, I was fooled the first time, but I'm sure it's the ground now. So he opened his eyes, and immediately he was yanked back up into the sky. The woman repeated her warning. This is your last chance. If you don't keep your eyes closed until you feel grass this time, you'll never reach your home again. So, for the third time, he dropped through the hatch and started on a long trip down. Soon, he felt his body hit something, but he didn't look. Then he bumped into something else, but still he wouldn't peek. And a third time, his body banged into something, but his eyes stayed closed. Then, his clutching hands brushed grass, and he opened his eyes. He was lying on the ground. His family had just finished putting up fish for the winter, and they were really happy to see him. They soon found that he was one changed young man. Never again would he snare seagulls or hurt them in any way. You've been listening to a story from the book Kanaina Tales from Alaska by Bill Vaudrin, published by University of Oklahoma Press. Northern Storyteller is a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. Our program is coordinated by Ron Inouye, the executive producer is Paula Canella, and I'm Mike Herman.